the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey, y'all. This is Bobby Golden. I have with me, as always, Jason Bond, part of the Rice crew here at Stoneville, Mississippi. And, man, it has been really hot out there today. It's, what, supposed to get up to about 97?
Yeah, like Friday or Saturday, it's supposed to be 97.
You know, it's hard to believe that it's almost June, but past Memorial Day, we expect that heat. But for most of the part of May, we really had some bad heat this year.
Yeah, I said several times we pretty much had June and May after we had February and April, so we pretty much missed 3 months of weather.
So missing 3 months of weather, you know, that's the new normal, or what is normal. But we do know oftentimes this time of year, we're generally dealing with pre-flood herbicide and pre-flood fertilizer applications. We've talked about that a little bit last week, and we felt like because we talked so much about fertilizers trying to set up for what Alberto might have brought to us for wet soil conditions, well, obviously that hadn't happened in the greater part of the Delta. So maybe we need to focus a little more this week on what that pre-flood herbicide application should look like when in an extremely dry environment.
Well, so last week, Bobby, when we talked about pre-flood herbicide applications, talked about weed ID and technology and soil moisture content. And then so to go a little more detail on what goes into that pre-flood herbicide application, you know, the way we grow rice with a delayed flood system, most often our main effort at controlling broadleaf weeds falls into that timing. There's times when we have exceptions, like we have really, really thick Palmer amaranth or some other problems, where we might need to come in earlier than that and make an application. But traditionally, you know, over the course, at least the time that I've been a weed scientist, we usually tailor that broadleaf herbicide application to the pre-flood timing.
And Jason, when we're talking about that broadleaf herbicides and the broadleaves we're trying to control, you know, we always think of Palmer amaranth. It's a huge one in soybeans, cotton, and our upland crops. But when we're talking about rice, what is the most troublesome broadleaf weeds in a rice crop?
Probably Palmer amaranth. I mean, it just is. Fortunately, you know, Sharpen has become a big part of our pre-herbicide application. So Roundup Command and Sharpen at planting has done a really good job, you know, complementing control of Palmer amaranth. You know, some of our more what we would consider traditional broadleaf weeds and rice, definitely morning glories, various different species of morning glories, hemp sesbania, coffee bean.
I think that's part of a good foundational program approach. We've had Command for some time now. We've had Roundup for some time now, but in the grand scheme of rice chemicals, Sharpen is relatively new. Are you ready to label that as a foundation herbicide now?
Well, you know, we've got it in our Mississippi State Enterprise budget for rice. So we, you know, me and you and, you know, Jeff Gore and the other guys that go into putting that budget together, we felt confident enough in it to put it there. So I would say, yeah, for us in Mississippi, the way we grow rice, yeah, it's one of our foundation treatments right now.
Okay, and when we're attacking those broadleaf weeds this time of year in that pre-flood time frame, there's a lot of new material out there. Could you run us down with some of that? We've heard a lot about Loyant and some others coming out.
Yeah, so Loyant definitely from Dow AgriSciences or Corteva or Dow DuPont or
yeah,
whatever.
You probably messed up right there.
Well, it's got to be one of those three, right?
So I guess.
Yeah, I gave credit where credit was due to somebody. So I think it's right. I think it is Corteva AgriSciences now. So definitely, you know, it's getting a lot of attention. There's some other products. Gambit, Gowan has a new product called Gambit, which is a basically, you know, if you want to talk trade names, it's a premix of Permit and Peak, which we've never used Peak in rice before. It's been used in some other crops. So it's obviously an ALS herbicide combination, including Permit.
And so I think about Permit, not to cut you off, but when I think about Permit, I'm not really thinking about a broadleaf. I'm thinking about nuts edges. So what does this new gambit material bring to the table for that?
Most definitely. And permit's one of those. I always say it, you can do a lot of different things with permit depending on the rate. You know, you can go real low on the rate and pretty much target annual sedge and some of the more perennial nut sedges. And then you can get on up, you know, 3/4 of an ounce, even an ounce plus the max for the year is an ounce and a third. And you can do a lot of different things with permit, you know, depending on the rates you use. But general, the rates we're going to use is going to be somewhere between 1/2 and 3/4 of an ounce, depending on who's making that call. And that's where the peak part of the gambit product comes in. It's really going to complement the broadleaf weed control. And I don't think it's really revolutionizing. You know, you're not going to pick up 50 more species or anything, but it's definitely broadening out the weed control spectrum and maybe, you know, in increasing the control of some of the species that maybe permit's not quite as strong on.
Okay, so let's get back to this loin. I've been seeing a lot on Twitter about how good control we get of broadleaf weeds with it. We've also done a lot of testing with it the last few years, and it's pretty excellent barnyard grass material. Where do we stand on that in Mississippi? I know several applications have went out, and I've talked to consultants that's had very good control with it. What's your expectations of this product?
Well, and the feedback that I've had from it control-wise has been positive. You know, guys are pleased with the level of barnyard grass control that they're getting, and I would say they're even impressed with the level of palm amaranth control that they're seeing with the product. You know, just some details about it. You know, it's one rate, you know, so it doesn't have a range of rates like some other products. So it's a pint to the acre. Generally a pre-flood application. Pretty much discourage applications earlier than that because the control is really going to be complemented by establishing a flood within a reasonable amount of time. For those of you that have used grandstand, it's kind of a grandstand timing, you know, 3 to 5 days prior to flood. And you're really going to see a big boost in the control by getting the water on.
So one thing we saw and heard from a lot of consultants last year in limited testing is they felt like when you got that loin out there that in some cases you felt like you might have missed something, but you really didn't. You need to wait before you pull the trigger too quick on something else. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, I think that's true, Bobby. And that's where the water comes in, really. I think if you made the application on dry ground and depended on, you know, just the herbicide, you might be waiting an extended period of time to see what you would think would be satisfactory control, whereas getting the water on there, it's going to really speed up the control. Obviously, the water's not for something like barnyard grass. Water's not controlling barnyard grass, but, you know, complementing the control, getting water over the crown of that plant.
But, you know, we always think of that flood, and in last week's episode, I think we said number 1A for flooding rice was weed control, so that kind of goes hand in hand with your herbicides.
Yeah. You know, and something like Palmer Amaranth, definitely Loent, I think, is going to be one of the better products that we've had for rice for Palmer Amaranth. But some of the other products, you know, that you really don't think of as being pigweed herbicides, the combination of that herbicide and then establishing a flood pretty quick can really turn those into pigweed herbicides, so to speak.
So how does that all compare to, you know, your standard type STAM or propanil-based program like Rice Bow or others?
On a reasonably sized Palmer Amaranth, a propanil based product is hard to beat. But you know,
you talk about reasonable size a lot, and reasonable size to me and reasonable size to you might not be reasonable size to a guy down the road. So what do you consider a reasonable size in a rice field?
We could talk for an hour about what reasonable size is for rice herbicides versus row crop herbicides, because those two are very different things. But for Palmer Amaranth with a propanil based product, you know, I say you don't have a whole lot more flexibility than you do with a lot of our soybean treatments, whether it be Flexstar or whether it be Liberty and a Liberty Link soybean. You probably got 4, you know, sometimes 6 inches, depending on your propanil rate and the water volume that you're putting it out at. So definitely with a product like Loent, I think you do have a little bit more forgiveness with it on weed size than you do with what would be considered a contact treatment like STAM.
When we talked about loying a lot. One thing that we have heard is that it does tend to injure soybeans when it's sprayed in close proximity to them.
Yeah, so there's been, you know, we've gotten some feedback that we've injured some soybeans in proximity to some rice fields treated with loyant. You and I have seen some of those, and, you know, can't deny that it happened. And I think, you know, it's a new product. Everybody's, you know, increasing their comfort level using it. You know, the data that we've seen, you know, we haven't done that work. Some guys in other states were doing the off-target movement for loyant onto soybeans. The data that we've seen indicates that, one, it seems not to go as far as some of the other growth regulator products that are being used right now. We won't use the word dicamba, but, you know, we know dicamba.
You just used the word dicamba.
I did.
And when you put a word in there like dicamba, you almost think about volatility. So loyant is a non-volatile compound. Am I correct in saying that?
From what we know of that molecule so far, yeah. It's, you know, everything we've been told about the chemistry of it, it is a non-volatile molecule. But so back to the soybeans. I didn't mean to bump my mic there. So Bobby bought new podcasting equipment, and we're still getting used to getting accustomed to using mics. And
I think Jason is. I think I'm okay with it.
I don't know. You get mighty close to that microphone, like you're scared it's going to get away from you or something. So anyway, the loyant on soybeans, the data that we've seen indicates that, you know, the across the road type drift. If you ever heard me talk about drift, you've probably heard me say, you know, across the road type drift. So a higher rate for what would be considered off target. Obviously, that's going to be devastating to a crop. But then in those applications that maybe go a little bit further out, and I don't have a number for what further out is, but, you know, more of what we think is a drift situation, the data suggests that those soybeans recover. Now, we'll see what happens, you know, when we actually have real off-target movement, and it's yet to be seen what's happening with some of those fields out in the real world right now.
I got you. So still optimistic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Definitely. I know we've got a lot of calls from consultants and retailers alike over the last several days, very interested in the product, even after hearing us some issues with it based on the data that we provided over the winter. I think one of the biggest things that we failed to mention is the new technology that we have out this year in Provisia and the Provisia rice lines. I know we don't have a lot of acreage in the state of Mississippi, but we do have some acreage out there in specific places that do need the red rice control. So you talked a lot about broadleafs. Tell us what Provisia brings to the game for control of red rice and weedy type off hybrids in the field.
All right, so Provisia rice is our second herbicide resistant rice technology, non-GMO, so similar to Clearfield in that regard. So we had the Clearfield system that's been available since 2002, and then 2018 is the official commercial launch of the Provisia system. So the herbicide we're using for Provisia rice is also sold under the trade name Provisia, and it was sold previously in soybeans and other row crops as Assure and Assure 2. So, you know, guys that are familiar with that herbicide from really, really pre-Roundup Ready days, it's the same herbicide. Similar to Clearfield use pattern, two applications, pre-flood. The rate is 15.5 ounces. That's considered the 1X rate. But really, you have 31 ounces total for the year with a range of 13 to 18 in a single application. So we've done 15.5 followed by 15.5. We've done 13 ounces followed by 18 ounces, 18 followed by 13, all manner of combinations there.
And y'all feel really good with that 15 followed by 15.
For sure. The control of red rice, which is what we have screened it on initially and then felt real good with the control we were getting there. We've done volunteer hybrids. We've done volunteer, you know, inbred lines. We've done barnyard grass. Control was excellent. Of all of those, the one issue with Provisia, the herbicide, would be the potential for antagonism when we mix herbicides in there with it. So something like Stam, you know, we can go from really good control of grass control with Provisia to very, very poor control should we mix Stam with it. So
if I'm using a product like Rice Bow, probably don't want to put Provisia in that application.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. You know, I think there's a place for it. And like you said, you know, we have limited acreage in Mississippi, so we're not going to have a lot of commercial experience with it, you know, in our geography coming out of this year. But we also, fortunately, don't have a huge problem with red rice and volunteer weedy rice. So that's a good thing, too.
That's one of the reasons we don't have a lot of acreage of it, because simply this first release just doesn't have that yield staying power that you want to see, just like any first release coming onto the market. And if you don't have that huge problem with weedy rice in a field, it's really not going to give you the yield level that you're looking for.
So what about the varieties, Bobby? I mean, you mentioned that, but I know there's some fertility considerations with it as well.
Yeah, so when we're talking about Provisia, the number one thing that you got to realize with this first release is it's very, very pale green in color. You can put as much nitrogen on it as you want, and you're not going to change that pale green color. So what we've learned in our research plots the last couple years is you need to fertilize it normally. If you try to over-fertilize it to get it turned green, it's going to fall down on you and you're not going to be happy. So if you have those Provisia fields out there or you're interested in trying, just think that it's going to be a little lighter green than what you're used to seeing with Rex or some of the hybrids that are currently out there that you've been growing for the last several years.
Oh, well, that made me think of another question. It's one I've heard you address several times in the last week, so I know a lot of folks are interested in it. Where are we at on acreage, and what is just in general, what's our variety breakout for Mississippi?
All right, so where we're at on acreage this year is probably in that 130,000 range, give or take 5,000 either side. In general, I would say we're probably pushing 60% hybrids out there. The rest of the market is going to be split between the clear fields and conventionals. Obviously, with clear fields, probably taking a little bit more of that pie than the conventionals. We did have our conventional acreage ramp up this year, so I feel like we'll have more Rex and Diamond out there than we've had the last several years, primarily due to Diamond coming on strong. All right, guys, well, that's about all the time we have for this week for you. If you like what you hear, give us a thumbs up on your iTunes. If you don't like what you hear, call in. We'll take a tongue lashing. So give us a shout. We'll talk about anything y'all want to talk about.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.